is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Tunisia, the Arab Spring. Back to the fall of 2010. We welcome Josh Rogan, Global Opinions of the Washington Post, to take us back to the future. The unhappiness with a longtime regime in Tunisia led to a catastrophe. A young person destroyed himself, self-immolation. We were told at the time that set off a domino effect across the Arab world. The Arab Spring, it was called. What we have today to remember the Arab Spring is the destroyed and failed state of Libya, the destroyed and failed state of Syria, and now back to Tunisia. Josh, a very good evening to you. The president of Tunisia, his name is Kais Saied, beg pardon for pronunciation. This is Reuters. Says he will remake Tunisian politics in 2022 with a new constitution and parliament after seizing executive power last year in a move his foes called a coup. But the threat of national bankruptcy may upend his plans. Introduce us to how he came to be a man with executive power against his foes. What is the status? What is the understood status of Tunisia right now? Good evening to you, Josh.
Well, good evening, John. Well, here we are 10 years after the Arab Spring began in Tunisia. And as of last year, Tunisia stood as the only country from that series of revolutions that had maintained a semblance of a democratic, pluralistic democracy that had some checks and balances. It was very messy. The economy was not good. But what happened last July is that President Saied essentially perpetrated what's known as a self-coup. A self-coup is a special kind of coup where someone is elected into power and then disables all the rest of the instruments of power until they've assumed total control of the government and its operations and its organs and its powers. And that's essentially what Saied is 85% finished doing. And, you know, in the beginning, the Biden administration took a wait and see approach. And some democracy activists criticized that at the time. But their argument was, well, this is very popular in Tunisia, which it was. And he promises to restore the parliament in 30 days after locking them out of the building and surrounding the parliament building with tanks, literally. And let's give him a chance to make good on his promises. And over the last 8 months, all we've seen are crackdowns and more consolidations. And he destroyed the independence of the judiciary. Then he started arresting dissidents and political opposition people on trumped up charges. Then they started to have military tribunals. And 8 months later, you know, you have to look at that situation and realize that this is only going in one direction, but the U.S. Government is nowhere to be seen. And that's where we stand now. We stand on the precipice of passing a point of no return whereby Tunisia just becomes another Arab Middle Eastern autocracy like Egypt and Saudi Arabia and Syria and all the other places where people rose up to demand their rights and their freedoms and a say in their own government and were batted down by a strongman.
If I remember, this is, I mean, Josh, we're talking more than 10 years here, 2010. If I remember, there was turmoil in the economy at the time of the rising up against the regime. That apparently is present now. Once again, there are questions about bankruptcy. There are headlines about the central banker saying, we'll be fine, we'll come out of this. Is that threatening Saied in any fashion? Does the opposition gain power because of it?
Well, yeah, you're exactly right, John, that, you know, economic upheaval caused the first revolution and economic upheaval paved the way for its overturn by President Saied. So, yes, part of the justification used for this was the true fact that the government had been and the economy had been badly mismanaged. And he's promising to restore the economy. But at the same time, he can't really do that because there's a pandemic and because actually he's spent more of his time consolidating power than fixing anything. And that's where, you know, some people in Washington, the couple of people who still seem to care about this issue, and there aren't many actually in Congress who are even following it. But what they say is that, okay, well, that's our leverage. And, you know, if he really wants to make good on his promises, he's going to need that multi-billion dollar IMF loan pretty soon. And we have a $500 million infrastructure compact that is stalled, and we have some military aid. And, you know, we should use this leverage to nudge him towards less horrendous outcomes. But the Biden administration doesn't seem to have the bandwidth or the will to do any of that. They've taken a regional approach that's hands off. And, you know, this is run straight out of the White House, and they don't think that they should be spending a lot of time and effort trying to influence these Arab regimes and autocrats into doing anything. And that results in them thinking that they have a free pass to do anything. And that's exactly what they're doing.
A significant Democratic Senator, Chris Murphy, traveled to Tunisia. You have a quote from him in your column about this, calling Saeed a quasi-dictator. Now, Murphy is not a marginal player here. He's a major voice in the Democratic Party. Is he causing trouble for the White House by pointing out the obvious that Tunisia's in trouble?
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely criticizing the White House, and because he ostensibly wants to become Secretary of State next, you know, that's a risky thing for him to do. But the thing is that the Biden White House doesn't seem to care either way. They don't really seem to. The State Department doesn't really seem to have much to say on it one way or the other. So Chris Murphy, I guess, can criticize them without many consequences. But it's good that he at least traveled there and met with Saeed and is trying to hold him to the things that he said. And the other people that I've seen who still care about this include Representative Joe Wilson, who comes from the completely other side of the political spectrum as Chris Murphy. But again, because he's been there and traveled there and is invested in the idea that, you know, we should demonstrate a model of Arab Middle East democracy that can survive even with some Islamist elements and some, you know, secular elements. And if that's not true anymore, then what are we just giving up on the democratic aspirations of all people in that region and consigning it to another generation of repression? And, you know, that's not a partisan thing. That's just do you really believe in this idea of democracy or not?
A detail. Europe is extremely threatened by human trafficking coming from North Africa, chiefly from the remains of Libya, but also from Tunisia. Boats are sinking all the time or there's an emergency. Does that move the Biden administration? Does that move Europe to in some fashion, challenge Saeed's dictatorship?
You know, regretfully, European powers have often sided against the more democratic, pluralistic elements in a lot of these North African and Sahel countries and in favor of the strongmen. And we saw that in Libya. We saw that to a degree in Egypt, and we're seeing it again in Tunisia. They just don't have the same view as the United States. On the other hand, the Biden administration's view is that Europe should have a stake in all of these countries as part of their idea that the United States should be burden sharing. So burden sharing is nice, but only if you agree on what you're supposed to be doing. And, you know, for Saeed, that just all equals one thing, which is that the international community is asleep at the wheel, so he doesn't have to heed any of their concerns. And that's why the abuse is getting so obvious and so rampant. And that's why I think time is running out to do something.
It was the Arab Spring. It was also called the Tunisian Revolution. It was also called the Jasmine Revolution, which was not native to the area, we learned afterwards. It was a journalistic name. But Josh, you remember how it frightened the Chinese, how they banned jasmine tea, mention of it at the time?
You know, this is what all of the autocratic despots talk about, the color revolutions, the orange, the pink, the rose, the this, the that. Because for them, it's all one movement. For them, the expansion of freedom and democracy and human rights is a threat because they don't believe in any of those things. And, you know, here we are enjoying all of those things in America behind our oceans and our walls. And we think, oh, well, yeah, maybe those Arab Muslims can't figure it out. Maybe they don't deserve democracy. Maybe it's not their culture. But that's the autocrats know that's nonsense. The autocrats know that if democracies are allowed to flourish and given support and kept free from autocratic despots, they can flourish, and they're actually much better. People like them better.
Josh Rogan, Global Opinions, Washington Post. I'm John Batchelor.